You sell him, you can sometimes do that, but you have to take a shmuel first. Why do you have to take a shmuel? So we spent a lot of time talking about it Wednesday, Rashi and Tosfos, how this relates to the general sugya of Hanin. But at the end of the day, you can sometimes get money from the Yisomim, and sometimes we're even going to forego that shmuel. Sometimes we're going to say that, well, the lova died within this man. The odds that the lova paid back are so slim, therefore, even the shmuel goes away. You have a shtar, you're going to collect and charge the poly products. So the shmuel will not apply if it's within this map. But up until now, we've been talking about the ability or sometimes the difficulty of collecting from Yisomim. But now we have to take this to the next level. We have to analyze what kind of Yisomim are we even talking about. So there are, of course, two different categories of Yisomim. There's some gedolim and there's some ketanim. There's some over the age of bar mitzvah, somewhere under the age of bar mitzvah. Now, both under and over have the same issue in the sense of that they don't really have a good sense as to what was going on. Maybe the gedolim have a little bit of a better sense, but both of them are pretty much in the dark. So lechora, if you raise the matter, said that, well, whatever limitations you have being going from Yisomim, it's the same, ketanim and gedolim. And if you take a shvua, if a shvua overcomes that concern vis-a-vis gedolim, it should overcome the concern vis-a-vis ketanim as well. Even though, you know, initially we kind of think that, well, the 3-year-old and the 4-year-old Yosem are, they both Yosem, but not quite the same. But in terms of pure Dinim, the Din should be the same. Neither of them know really what's going on that much. And if we take it, make the Baba take a Shmua, so then it should be different. So comes the Gemara in Erechin, and the 9th of Ramah comes and tells us that is in fact not the case. It comes the Gemara and says, Echin Chabezim and Aleph, Amra Vida Mervasi. Ein is Kochim and Michli Yosemim. LMK, nice rivers of chelos behead. But Asi says that we will not let you collect from your Yisomim, period. End of discussion, except for a very, very bizarre case. But normally we will not let you collect from your Yisomim ever, ever, ever. Now, what does that mean? We're not going to let you collect from your Yisomim. The Mishnah is to talk about a bali promise to your Yisomim. What do you mean you're not going to collect? Obviously, we have a rhyme here. We're talking about babies. They're talking about under the age of bar mitzvah. So Yisomim Ketanim, Rav Asi is saying, you're never going to be able to collect from them. So now all of a sudden, Rav Asi just created for us two different categories of Yisomim. There are the Yisomim who are over the age of bar mitzvah, who it's going to be a little difficult. We're going to change the rules a little bit. We're going to make it take a shmua. We're going to go up to bat for them, tanina. I think we spoke about it Wednesday. Push comes to shove, you will have some way to collect the money from Yisom Gedolim. In contrast to Yisom Ketanim, the game's opposite of Ravasi, you're never ever going to be able to collect from him at all. We have no idea why. But Ravasi gives us an exception to the rule. The exception to the rule is, if you have a shtar that has ribbis against them, then we're going to let you collect. Wait a second, ribbis, you weren't supposed to have ribbis in the first place. So obviously, the Gemara's not talking about a Jewish shtar, it's about a Goyish shtar. Namely, a Goy comes with a shtar against the person, says, I lent you $500,000 payable with 5% interest, and I want to collect. And we're going to say, no, these are Yisom Ketanim. We're going to stick up for them. We're not going to let you touch them until the bar mitzvah. That's very noble of us, except for the fact that now they're 3, and that's going to be 10 years from now. At the rate of 5%, it's going to be now $50,000 over a few years from now. So it's not in the best interest of the Yisomim for us to follow this halacha. And therefore, the Gemara says, the Chazal made a special loophole to the halacha and said, if it's a shtar, sheyesh baribis, where there's an incentive for the Yisomim to pay out the loan right away. So it's nice for us to sit around and dilly-dally and say, no, we're not touching these guys until they turn bar mitzvah. It's not a good thing to do. And therefore, Chazal, in a sense, override what the other consideration was. Then the Gemara goes on with some technical details. Are there other cases that perhaps we will also override it? Are there other concerns, other cases where it's in someone's best interest to pay back the chov right away? Maybe, yeah, maybe no. And again, that's not really a sugya right now. But what emanates from a sugya is the following, is that there are really two different halachas playing out. There's a halacha of Yisomim Gedolim, where we have a lot of hesitations to collect. and we may throw tanninin at you, and we may make that karnas chametz and make it teshuas. But push comes to shove, if you go through the proper channels, you will be able to collect from yisavim gedolim. Yisavim ketanim, the doors are closed. Ein yisavim yisavim, except for the one crazy mishur in the case, the guy's got mishtashish bereh. You know, we're not talking about that. But normal circumstances, ein yisavim yisavim. The problem is why? Why is the second halacha true? And the reason why the second halacha is true is going to have a significant impact on our sugi b'abasa dafei. So the Gemara in Erechin offers two different reasons. For some reason, it got chopped off the Marmakamos, the punchline of the sugi got chopped off. But it's actually two different reasons that are presented in the Gemara. Why Einis Kacha Nechasim Liyasam Ketanim? So the Rav Papa says, the answer is very simple. Rav Papa says that Priyas Malchov Mitzvah V'yas Be'la B'nei Mitzvah Dinu. Says Rav Papa, why do you have to pay back a chov in the first place? Why do we even think that we're going to go after the Yisomim, we're going to go after the Yershim? For that matter, why do we have to go after anybody to pay back a chov? Because religious law dictates you have to pay back a chov. Priyas b'chov mitzvah. You have an ethical moral obligation to pay back a chov. That's very nice. For people who are obligated in ethical moral obligations, people who are over the age of bar mitzvah, the same that they have to put on tefillin, they have to sit in the sukkah, they're a shofar, so they have to perform their mitzvah in Ramach Amero, and they're required to pay back their chov, or they're required to pay back their father's chovus. Masha Ein Kein, someone who's under the age of bar mitzvah, we don't have to bother them, we don't have to burden them with religious obligations, they're not chayv to come Dav Shachris, they're not chayv to pay back chovus. Wait until they turn bar mitzvah. So that's Rav Papa's formulation. So according to Rav Papa, the distinction between Ketanim and Gedolim is not so much a Din of Mamonis distinction, it's really a religious distinction that now impacts on a Din of Mamonis distinction. Again, with the exception being, it was Ribbis Achelos Ben, you know, you're right, that in pure Halacha, the 10-year-old kid doesn't have to pay back the guy who's coming with a shtar against him. But Chazal made a takwana that we're going to make him pay back anyway because it's in his best interest. Otherwise, he's going to be stuck with another 3 years' worth of interest. Comes Rav Huna Bereid of Yeshua and says, no, that's not the reason why. The reason why Ein Yiskach HaNechasim Yisraim, the reason why we don't force the Ketan to pay back the Chav is Mishum Chashash Tzrori. Tzrori means like Tzurin. It means we wrapped up, tied up together. We're afraid that the father, before he died, may have set aside something to be collected from, and he may have actually given it to the malva to hold on to. He may have had some, you know, some diamonds or something, some expensive jewels, and he put it into a little bag, tied it up, and sent to the malva. Listen, I'm not paying you back the chov yet. The chov's not due yet. I'm not paying you back the chov yet. On the other hand, you know, I understand, you know, the malva is not feeling so well. He's afraid he may die. He doesn't know what's going to happen. He wants to, you know, doesn't want to be inside. He said, listen, hold on to this batch, and if and when the time comes and you don't get paid back for whatever reason, so at least you have recourse, you'll be able to take back these tzrori. Now, that agreement that was made under the table between the love and the malva may not be known to the Yisomim, especially since the Yisomim are 3 years old, so they're not going to be so savvy to be able to figure this out, to be able to search for records to go find out. Maybe somebody knows about this under the table agreement. So comes Rav Huna Bereid of Yeshua and says that calls about the Yisomim, Ketanim, we have to go the extra mile and be cheshish. Maybe there was tzrar. Maybe there really was some kind of a quasi-payment agreement that we don't know about. Once the kids are gedolim, then they have to do a research. They have to find out, you know, we're not going to be cheshish just forever. If they can come up with some reason to believe that this really did occur, then they can get off the hook. If they can't prove it to us, then the chazok is, they probably thought, I didn't pay. We have no record of any of this. So we're going to be cheshish for this, and the kids are already old enough to be mivar one way or the other. So machlekes or papa or Rav Yeshua, why is it that the halachas kicks in that says einik diskach lichsi yisrael? I'm only talking about tanim, not gedolim. Gedolim for sure I have to pay. We're going to make them take shvuas. It's nice little kind of things till we get the money, till we make them pay. But the special din that ein ifram and chasim yisomim with tanim, which happens not even to be a mishnah, doesn't appear in the mishnayos. It's this gemara in Erech and Davcha Beis. The gemara references it a few times, but this is the main sugya in Erech and Davcha Beis. That einich this kachal and lechsi yisam ketanim. So this is either true for a papa's reason of priyas balchov mitzvah and ketanim alabnei mitzvah, or it's based on chashash of tzori. Right, so Chazal always had to walk this tightrope. On the one hand, we don't want to make things too difficult for a malva. On the other hand, we don't want to make things too unfair for the lova. So you're right, Chazal, it's like any other concern, you know, the mamonis. We have to walk their balance and try to come up with the perfect balance. So it's in light of this Gemara that the Rishonim and our sugya now begin the following discussion. Come to Rishonim and say that, well, wait a second, What? How would this din play out if the loved died within the Zman? The Zman and Piron didn't even occur yet. And now, all of a sudden, we have a din Torah. The Malva comes 6 months later. He comes to the Bnei HaLoveh, to the Yershim Ktanim, and he says, listen, I have a shtar that says your father owes me money. I'd like to be reimbursed. So the initial reaction is, we're not going to touch you. So we're not even open up the case because they're under the age of our mental. We'll come back in a few years from now. Wait a second. The Malva says, oh, wait, it's B'soch HaZman. And B'soch HaZman, that trumps everything. Remember we said, Habali Par B'nichsi Yisom Gedolim. Normally, when it comes to collecting from the Chasim of Yershim Gedolim, you're going to give me a whole to-do. You throw the book of me, I take a Shvua, Maislach, Bezdin, Tanina, Takonara, a million things. A million impediments before I collect. But if it's B'soch HaZman, all that falls by the wayside. It didn't change. That's what said Baba Basra Daf Hey, that Afal Gav, the Amar Rabbanon, Habali Par B'nichsi Yisomim, Leipal B'Shvua. Even though Chazal said, when you go after Yisom Gedolim, you have to take a million things before you get the money, but we'll give you the money. So in a case of Toch HaZman, all of those impediments fall by the wayside. Should we now say that a Toch HaZman trumps the din of Einich Sot Niskach and Yisom Ketanim as well? Should we say that it's Toch HaZman, it's Toch HaZman, everything goes Toch HaZman, the Malva gets full collection rights, notwithstanding the fact that the kids are 2 years old. Should that din carry over or not? Our Gemara is silent on the topic. All our Gemara says is that Toch HaZman trumps the regular rules. It trumps the rule of Yishovim Gedolim. The Gemara does not say, move, doesn't say a word about Yishovim Gedolim. So that's the question that Tosfos and all the other Rishonim raised. And in order to know the answer to that question, we have to go back to the drawing board and understand a little bit more, find through a little bit more, what was the issue of Yishovim Gedolim. So we saw the two reasons that the Gemara gave. One was Rav Papa's because the La B'nai Mitzvah. One was Rav Huda B'nai Yeshua because of Chashash of Tzorei. But now we have to figure out a little bit deeper as to what is this all about. So comes the Gemara in the 10th of the Ramah Kabbalah, the Gemara Ksubas Da Pevav, and all of a sudden has a very, very startling question. Very, very bizarre sounding question. Pevav Amid Aleph. Amalei Rav Kahana Rav Papa. Don't forget who Rav Kahana is talking to. He's talking to Rav Papa. So Rav Papa was the one back in Erech and Chavdeis who said, the reason why Ketanim don't pay back Chobos is because Priyas Bachov Mitzvah. Rav Papa was the one who formulated that principle. Priyas Bachov Mitzvah, with the corollary being, Yisem Ketanim Laban and Mitzvah Ninim. So Rav Kahana Rav Papa. The Didach to Amrus Priyas Bachov Mitzvah, according to you, who said that the reason why a Lov in general pays back a Chov is because there's a mitzvah to do so. The Lover says, I'm not so from. I don't put on tefillin. I don't keep Shabbos. I don't keep kosher. And I don't pay that chavis either. Go do me something. So according to Rav Papa, who said, you want to know why you have to pay that chavis because of a religious, ethical, moral responsibility to do so, I'm not interested in performing mitzvahs. Now what happens? What's the next step? Amalei, Rav Papa responded to him, Tanina, we learned in a brisa. When is there a sugya of Malkus, which is very, very limited? Malkus means we give you 39 Malkus then, and then the game's over. So finished. About the mitzvah's essay, what if a person didn't do a lav? Malkus for lavim is a punishment. It's a response to what you did already. What if it comes to a mitzvah's essay? A person says, I don't want pencil. I don't want to sit. I don't want to eat matzah. So here, we want to encourage you, strongly, it's kind of a soft word, strongly encourage you to do this. We're not punishing you per se. We're encouraging you to do something in the future. Then the Beis Din, this man, the Beis Din had autonomy to do this. We obviously live in a world where there's not an option anymore. But when the Beis Din had the ability to do so, so they have a right to be makana samyajna, so they're allowed to force him to do the mitzvahs. Achitate nafsho. Now, whether achitate nafsho means literally he dies, it probably doesn't mean that. It probably means until whatever. All his karchas are left, and he says, listen, it's not worth the fight anymore. But listen what the Beis Din says. So the bottom line is, there is a sugya called kefen ala mitzvah. So again, the fact that that's not on our radar screen is not as that doesn't detract from the fact we have to learn the sugya. That kefen sochi ala mitzvah. There is a din called the kefen ala mitzvah. So comes from Pop and says, you want to know what gives us the ability to force a person to pay back his chovos? Kefen ala mitzvah. That's what Papa's formulating. That's what Papa's understanding of the relationship between the Malva and the Loiva. When I lend you $1,000, you become religiously obligated to return it. Why exactly is that? What makes you religiously obligated? Rashi says, because you gave your word. So honesty, Tosfos is a little bit of a different reason. Whatever the reason is, there's some kind of a religious, you know, Torah-dik obligation to pay back your chalavos. And don't think for a moment that religious obligation is going to be treated lightly. You're going to have the option of saying, I'm not interested. We're going to force you the same way we can be kaifin for other mitzvahs as well. That's how, that was Rav Papa's formulation. But the corollary of the statement that paying back a chalav is a religious obligation, therefore, if it's a katan, so a katan doesn't have any religious obligations, a lot by mitzvahs, and therefore he's not going to be held accountable. And that is why Rav Asi said, but obviously Rav Huna, Rav Yeshua, had a different picture of this. Rav Huna, Rav Yeshua, went running and said, fundamentally, we should really make the katana pay back the chayvus. What do you mean? Of course they have to pay. You know why we don't make them pay? Because there's this core kotzrori, this outside possibility that maybe the father handed off a bag of diamonds in exchange for this chov a few weeks ago, and we don't know about it yet, and the katanim are not savvy enough to figure this out. So we're just going to put the case on hold until they turn by mitzvah. Not because the katanim don't have to pay. Of course the katanim have to pay. We're going to put it on hold just because maybe there's a payment, a quasi-payment that we're not aware of. That's what Rav Huna said. And the fact that Rav Huna Brady Yeshua formulated the concern in that manner clearly didn't buy into Rav Papa's model. Rav Papa's whole theory that Tana Malabene Mitzvah Ninu obviously didn't appeal to Rav Huna Brady Yeshua. Why not? Well, I thought Rav Papa makes a lot of sense. So the Ramban, and the 11th of the Ramban comes, we're not going to read the whole Ramban, it's some time of Shabbos, it's a very, very, very basic, fundamental Ramban. But the Ramban basically develops a Yesod HaDavar, that the machlokas between Rav Papa and Rav Huna Brady Yeshua is very basic, is very fundamental. It touches not just on the intricacies, the details of a three-year-old potentially, yes or no, paying back the chavis of a father. It touches on the very relationship of a malva and a loiva from the very beginning. I lend you $1,000. We'll use the phrase, you owe me $1,000. I'm going to challenge you. What do you mean you owe me $1,000? What made you owe me $1,000? What claim? I gave you $1,000. What claim do I have that gives me the ability to collect that $1,000? What do you owe me? What do those words mean? So the Ramban suggests that there are fundamentally two very, very different models, two very, very different ways of understanding the nature of this halacha. Everybody agrees at the end of the day, I'm going to get paid back. Everyone agrees I'm going to take you to a din Torah, unless you're a Yorish Katan, I'm going to take you to a din Torah, I'm going to collect my chayv. That's ABC's of halacha. Of course, a malva can collect his chovos. But the mechanism behind that, what engine drives the ability to collect the chov, is radically different, says the Ramban. And the radical difference is a machloek between Rav Papa and Rav Huna Brady Rav Yeshua. According to Rav Papa, when you borrow $1,000 from me, nothing really changes in Didi Mamonis. You don't owe me the money in Didi Mamonis. I don't own anything over you in Didi Mamonis. The fact that I'm going to eventually come and collect your house, I don't own the house. What gave me the house? How do I own? What do I own? I lent you $1,000. Finished. So what is my relationship between you? You have an obligation to return that $1,000. Kind of obligation. Where did that obligation come from? It's a religious obligation. It's fundamentally rooted in the world of mitzvahs. The world of mitzvahs requires of us to do a lot of things. We have to put on tefillah, we have to shake a lulav, we have to hear shofar, and we have to keep our word. We said we buy $1,000, we made an agreement we're going to pay back $1,000, so be it. The halacha requires of us that we do that. But it's rooted in the world of mitzvahs, in a religious kind of an obligation. And therefore, two things follow from that understanding. Therefore, if you happen to be an individual who's not chayv in mitzvahs, then you're not going to have to pay back the chov, i.e. you're a katan. So it's very nice that your father borrowed $1,000. Now, you were yorish the entire estate of your father, and you're walking around with this $1,000 in your pocket, but you have no religious obligation to give it back to me, the same way you don't have a religious obligation to put on tefillin yet. You reach by mitzvah, then we'll tie to the religious obligations. The second corollary of this, that if it's a religious obligation, one can now raise the question, wait a second, how is this enforceable in Mason? It's very nice that you have a religious obligation to keep your word, but tachlis, what's going to give teeth to the malva to go to Mason and take away your field? So that was exactly what Rav Kahana posed a challenge to Rav Papa. According to you, Rav Papa, who sees malva and a lova relationship as a religious obligation, and Therefore, if a person says they don't want to perform their religious obligation, what's going to change that? So the answer is, that was Rapapa's response, Chayfla Mitzvahs is going to solve that. Then the Ramban goes one step further. Ramban says, that's very nice. So we're Chayfla Mitzvahs. We're going to push you. We're going to make it very, very difficult for you to, and then at the end of the day, you still refuse to pay. So now what happens? So what happens next? So according to Rapapa's model, that it's mitzvah, and katanim, pturim, labanim, mitzvah, and kifel, it's all very nice, but at the end of the day, what gives us the right to go and take your field away? So the Ramban says, that's also b'chlal, kifel, and mitzvah. You know why? The Ramban coins a phrase, a concept called, achet techofenu begufo, techofenu b'mamono. That's also a din of kifel, and mitzvah. Kifel doesn't just mean to punch you. Little punch. Kfiya doesn't mean just to take this fill and put them on you. Kfiya means if your mitzvah is to give $1,000, we're gonna do it for you. Why do we have to beat you up for whatever? It's so much easier, so much clearer. We'll go. We'll take away your money. Come on. So ach techfer begufa, techfer b'mamona. That's a mitzvah in kfiya. That's a din of the koyach of kfiya on mitzvahs. So this is Rapapa's whole theory about mavavloiv relationship. It's not monetary in nature. It's religious in nature. Therefore, ketanim aren't obligated. Therefore, we raise the question. The guy doesn't want to. We invoke the parsha of kafir and mitzvahs. And how do we openly take away your property? That's also a din of kafir and mitzvahs. Says the Ramban, Rav Huna Bar Yehoshua had a different picture, legamrei. The coin to Rav Huna Bar Yehoshua, when I lend you $1,000, a change in dinim moment has just occurred. I was kind of something of yours. I acquired something of yours with that $1,000. You know what I acquired? I acquired what's called the shibud. I have a lien. I have something that exists against you and against your property. Not all that different than if I give you $1,000 to buy a piece of your land. So I'm the owner of the land. If I give you $1,000 and I thereby acquire a shibud, a mortgage, a lien on your land, so be it. So I'm the owner of that land. Therefore, Rav Huna Bar Yehoshua says, once there's a change in the momentous, it's absurd to speak about a katan not having to return it. Let's tell the marshal, if I bought a piece of land from you and then you die, so the katan's going to say, well, I'm not by mitzvah, so I don't have to give you the land back. It's my land. It belongs to me. A katan doesn't have to put on tefillin, but a katan can't hold on to something that's not his. So according to Rav Huna Bar Yehoshua, of course, the Ikar HaDin, since a mav of a levi relationship is a sheep, but it's kinyanim, is the dimaminis, of course, the katan has to pay back. So why does Rav Asi say the katan doesn't have to pay back? So the answer is that's a special takanas acham because of that outside chance of tzrari. We're afraid that maybe the loiva gave some diamonds to the mava last month. But if not for that technicality, so then of course the loiva is going to have to...
Sablowski, you're on mute. Sablowski, you're on mute.
Okay, we get to the last minutes of a Rav Huna Bar Yehoshua. So I got it. So one minute. So going to Rav Huna Bar Yehoshua, you would never ask such a question. Rav Kana never would have posed such a question to Rav Huna. According to Rav Huna, how do we make a balchayv? How do we make a lover pay? How do we make a pay? Because the money doesn't belong to them. Because that piece of karka, that shit of karka, that shiva doesn't belong to them. So of course we make them pay. There's nothing to do with the mitzvahs. I do with the mitzvahs. So we have two very, very different models playing out here between Rav Papa and Rav Huna Bar Yehoshua. One of the ABCs of a mavala relation. At the end of the day, everybody agrees to the facts on the ground. The facts are, you have to pay back a chayv. The facts are, if you don't want to pay the chayv, we're going to take your payment. We're going to make you take to pay the chayv. The facts are, ketanim yisoyim, we're not going after. How do you understand all those three facts? So Rav Papa formulated one version, and Rav Huna Bar Yehoshua formulated an entirely different version. They were friends, Rav Papa and Rav Huna Bar Yehoshua. They learned together. The Gemara says, "Ki yasi ubei rav." They used to be like literally chavrusas, but they were at the same tkufa. They were tamidim at the same time. So a lot of times they said things together, and sometimes they said things differently. So yeah, they had it radically kemechim esavim ma'ariv. So comes the Ramban with this whole theory as to what's going on in the sugya, and now says, and by the way, This machlekes, Rav Papa and Rav Huda Yeshua, is really an age-old machlekes. This machlekes did not start in the days of the Talmid Bar Rava. This machlekes has been going on for hundreds of years already. This is the issue that Chazal described, the term Shibuda Deraisa, the term Shibuda Lav Deraisa. These are terms that appear at the end of Masechet Bar Basra about the concept of Shibud. Is Shibud Adim in the Torah, Shibud Adim in the Rabbanim? So I'll Hashem on next week. So I want to pick up just the very end of this Ramban about the relationship with this Machlekes to the general issue of Shibud, and then put the final pieces together, how this has been ultimately impact on our sugya. We may even start the next sugya Tuesday. We'll be optimistic, but hopefully we start Wednesday. Yeah, so, you know, it's like a technical issue. You know, who's going to do that research for them exactly? So the assumption is that when they get older, they'll try to they'll do a better job. So that's the assumption. Okay. Good Shabbos.
Happy Shabbos. Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.